So yes, the Terrys are, the Terragata is more well known as the men, and but there is this Terragata. It's pretty unusual in a world religion that there's these texts that go back and stories that go back from the time when that religion started that are to do with women practicing. And I've got this kind of bee in my body. I've got this thing about that we actually can practice whatever kind of body we find ourselves in, whatever kind of gender or label we associate with or kind of feel we want to identify with. And we've had, kind of during the centuries, there's been quite a lot of talk about maybe women can't gain enlightenment, maybe it's harder, maybe it's this and that, and it's a bit sort of, can be a bit depressing. And actually, it's just not true. I mean, we have this whole, there's women who have gained enlightenment right from the beginning. And luckily enough, people have managed to realise that it's important that, I think it's this role model thing, isn't it? If you're like, if you come from one part of the world and you see someone else from the same part of the world, your same culture, your same background, doing the same kind of thing, practicing, you can feel more inspired and understand how you can practice. It's easier, and it's a bit easier having women who have practiced, that we are women, we can practice. So you have these role models, and we're luckily enough, people have kept the stories going of these women's, their way of practicing. For the first about 600 years it would have been, these stories would have been told verbally. So there's nothing being written down. So I guess over time, some of the stories have changed a little bit. People's names have got mixed up. In India, at that time, over 2,000 years ago, identity, the kind of personal identity, wasn't that important. So you get like these women having 500 disciples. But 500 just means loads, it means a big number. It might be 500, it might have been 2,000, we just don't really know. So it's not very, very accurate. But we've got these stories coming through. And then in the end, a guy called Dharmapala decided to write down. Well, that's who what's kind of survived anyway, is his writings from Dharmapala, who wrote down a lot of the Pali canons, so the kind of teachings of the Buddha, and actually wrote down the women's stories and their poems. There's these kind of poems that they utter that we think might have been sung at the beginning, so it's easier to remember songs, so they might have been sung, and they're kind of poems about their enlightenment experience or their understanding of the Dharma. So he wrote those down in about the 5th century. That was quite a long time after the Buddha, time of the Buddha. And it didn't come to English-speaking or the kind of Western European world until the 1890s. And then this guy was a diplomat and he was working in Sri Lanka. And he got very interested in the Dharma, so he found all these palm-leaved scripts and scriptures, and he took them back to Britain. And his wife was really interested as well, and she translated the Terragata, so these songs of the nuns, into English, and published. No one wanted to publish these. Who are these? What is Buddhism, and what's the Dharma, and what is this? No one wanted to publish it. But she just did it herself, and they started the Pali Society, Pali Text Society, and she, Caroline Rhys Davies, translated the Terragata, the poems of the early Buddhist nuns. And that was the first time it was published in English in 1909. So just over 100 years ago, we've had these. And then in about 1971, we had another translation by a guy called K.R. Norman. So it was a very sort of technical, analytical, precise translation. And they're both in this book. I don't know if you can get hold of it anymore, but that's Caroline Rhys Davies. And then
Palmbladen över till England. Vilket år var det? Jag skulle
den
säga?
Var 1800. Mr. Rhys Davies, so this lady's husband, was in Sri Lanka 1864 to 1877. So sometime during that time, he got hold of these palm leaf manuscripts and took them back to England. And they founded the Pali Text Society and they started translating those texts. And we get this kind of... and then just to finish that off, this story of how it gets here... Then in the 91, there's this woman who's really interested in Buddhism and feminism. And she sort of takes this old... She's called Susan Murcott. And she takes these old... They're slightly kind of... Well, 1909, it's old English, quite biblical language. So, and she sort of takes them and studies Pali and translates them and researches and comes up with a kind of more... slightly more modern version. So that's the one I'd recommend now to buy. The first Buddhist women. And she's taken, there's these 73 poems that survive, and she's taken 61 of them. So she hasn't used all of them. She doesn't think, she thinks some of them aren't right quite, they might not be quite authentic. So she's taken some of them. So it's great, I'm really grateful to them. So kind of managed to, well, just be interested in these scripts and translating them and learning Pali and getting these translations and following it through so that we can just, there's a lot on the internet now as well, the Terigata, you can just put in Terigata and you find them. And Teri means older women. So it's nice as well, isn't it? It's like these the women elders, the kind of the wise women. And gata means song, so it's songs of the elders. So women who have grown old in knowledge, and their songs, poems. So the poems are the wise women of early Buddhism. And they're like, I thought, well, we are, this is over, you know, a couple of thousand years ago, but we're in India, they're in India, and this kind of here, in this bit of India, on the north east, we've got the Buddha was born here, right on the border of Tibet, and then you get stories from women. They live quite, they're quite spread out over this area of India. It's quite a large area, so you've got people, women inspiring each other and practicing over quite a wide area. And how they were living, quite a few of the early women were extremely radical, and they were wanting to really kind of didn't really want to be part of this material society. So they went, they weren't like trying to escape the world, they were just wanting to be radical. So they went off and lived in the forest without very much. Some of them were just lived on their own. They were kind of like hermits out in the forest. And there's stories where they would come out into the villages and they'd put this big stick in the ground, and that was like a, if you want to do a discussion with me, come on here, I'm out of the forest, I'll take a discussion with you. And if you are able to beat them in a discussion on the Dharma, you can put the stick, you know, you can kind of throw the stick down and the stick stays standing and the stick stays standing. So there's these sort of old stories of these very kind of eccentric, wise, unusual women living out in the forest. Not owning anything, they're just wandering around on their own, and they're called Samani. I don't quite know how you say it in Pali, but S-A-M-A-N-I, these female wanderers, and they're a bit scary. The villagers are a bit like, oh, here they come, wow, they're kind of threatening in a good way. And then they gradually they build up these kind of communities. So they have like, they're not like, you know, this beautiful building, they're kind of like mud shacks, and they have their own rooms, or they might just share with one other person. That's called a Sadi Viharini, a roommate. It's quite nice. And they were having, like, eating rice, barley. They were eating rice and barley and wheat, beans, rye, fruit, vegetables. And they were only allowed to eat like oil and honey and meat and milk if they were poorly. So otherwise they had to avoid those things. So these gradually, these small communities building up. And they're allowed to be called a bhikkhuni sangha. So this is like these kind of like the monk communities building up. When there's five of them. Sounds like it might be Jenny. Is it a Jenny? Or is it to somebody else? Mm-hmm. It's a Jenny. Hello.
Together.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got a chair behind us. Hi. Välkommen.
Tack.
Vi är mitt i en berättelse om Terrigata som jag tar på engelska men så jag försätter bara. Om du vill ha vatten eller något bara gå ut och ta det. So they're kind of, so there's these kind of women living on their own out in the forest, or there's women kind of getting together as communities and living very simply. And there, if there's five of them together in a local area, they can actually ordain other women. If there's only two or three of them, they're not officially allowed to ordain someone else. They have to be five. Well, it's not that many, is it? So as long as there's five of them together, they can ordain people. And when they got these... Yeah. I've got no idea, actually. So somewhere or other, they've decided that they needed this number five to... I'm not sure where it's come from. And then when they had more established communities, they have these slightly more, they have like rules. So they are allowed to have three robes, and they're like these kind of old, it's just old material. It's not like posh robes. They're really like old, old clothing that they dye with saffron, so that they're all about saffron coloured. They're allowed one belt, they're allowed one razor and a bowl, and needle and thread, one water filter, and one menstruation belt. That was the only difference from the monks. They got a menstruation belt. And that was it. So that's where we are. We're kind of 2,000 years ago with these women, some of whom are kind of out on their own in the forest, some of whom live together. And they don't have that much. And then the whole... what you get through the Terrigata is this... Well, there's this very strong declaration that all these women, loads and loads and loads of them, are all like becoming enlightened, becoming, realizing very deep insight. You have this thing called Buddha Vacha. So Vacha is the voice of Buddha, the voice of the Buddha. So you get the Buddha saying, that nun, what she said to you, that was Buddha Vacha. That was exactly how I would express enlightenment, my insight experience. That person, that nun, understands deeply. They understand as much as I do the enlightenment experience, the insight experience. So you get quite a lot of the Buddha saying, this person's Buddha Vacha. And you get women teaching other women. So it's very kind of empowering. It's great. It's just like, oh, well, they did it 2,600 years ago with those conditions, which weren't brilliant. It was very much then, women were very much owned by men and the societies that they were married off to people, and they couldn't decide themselves. So that, you know, you could kind of leave the whole society and live in the forest, but otherwise it was quite difficult to be an individual, have your own life, woman. And in those conditions, they gained enlightenment. So I think it's very confidence, it's very empowering. If they could do it, we can do it. There's absolutely no reason why not. And throughout the Terrigata, there's just masses of Dharma. There's all these Dharma teachings. And you get like small little things. You get these women who've been practicing for years, and they're like, oh, struggling away in my meditation, nothing's happening, I'm going to give up, this doesn't work. And then they suddenly just like see this candle flickering and going out, and they're like, oh, I got it. It's like suddenly all that effort, you know, just keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. And then you get it. And of course, it's not just that they get it instantly, it's all that effort over all those years that they just kept going and kept going and kept going, and then it happens. So you get the sort of the slow enlightenment that suddenly happens. You get the kind of women being ordained. They might meet the Buddha, they might meet another woman practitioner. They get ordained, they get a meditation practice, and they get enlightened. It's like, whoa, day two after ordination. So that goes quite quickly. You get women who are like really, really young and absolutely beautiful, and they're like kind of, oh, I'm a princess and I'm so beautiful and I don't need the Dharma and what is all that rubbish? And then they get this kind of woman teaching them, and they sort of realise, oh God, I'm not going to be like this forever. It's all going to start changing, and they kind of gradually get insight. You get friends helping each other. You get the sort of, you get like the relatives going, don't be ridiculous, you have to get married, you can't not get married, and you can't not do that, you have to, you know, what are you doing? And you can't just be like the Sangha, they're just lazy, they just sit in the forest doing nothing, what are you doing? And they have to kind of stand up to them and say, no, actually, they're not being lazy, Dad. they're actually practicing, and they're really gaining insight, and you might not be able to recognise that, but it's really important. So you get this sort of having to stand up for yourself and say what's important. And you get women teaching men. There's a lot of women teaching kings and people like that. So I thought, well, I'll take three of these women, and we can just go into them a little more deeply. So the idea is that we have this on this retreat. So today I'm talking, and then we'll have groups around these three Terries and go into them more deeply. And then in the puja, have them again. And then tomorrow I'll hand over to Hridaya Chandran. She does her presentation and then her Terries in the groups, and then we have that puja to them.
Who are we on?
Loads, masses. We don't know. Yeah. What has survived from this whole oral tradition, like storytelling, what's been written down, we've got 73 poems. But they talk about, loads of them talk about my 500 disciples, and we know that that means a lot, and there's a lot of people there, so thousands, we don't know really, a lot, yeah. And we don't know, we've only got what survived, so I don't know. But we wouldn't be here without Mahapajapati, so she's like Terry Garter number one. I think so Maha means great, and Pajapati means leader of a huge assembly, she's a leader of a lot of people, so she's a sort of she's already a leader anyways, and she is the aunt of the Buddha. So the Buddha's born and his mom dies straight away after he's born, after giving birth, so she takes the Buddha and raises him. She's also a wife. They have many. She's also a wife to the Buddha's father. And so she's sort of in this position of seeing her son, bringing him up, loving him, and then one day he just suddenly kind of disappears. I don't want to do this life. I'm off. Bye. And so she doesn't see him for years. He's just disappeared. And quite a lot of his community and his relatives and his family are a bit kind of like, what is he doing? What's happened? He should be ruling us. He's supposed to be our leader. And he's just gone off. And of course, we know that he's gone off and he's practicing away and getting enlightened, but they don't know that. When she's about 50 or 60, so she's quite old, the Buddha comes back. Like, hi, Mum. And they haven't seen her for ages. And a lot of people were just like, you know, his wife refuses to speak to him. And you know, understandably, and people are upset. But she's sort of, this Ma Pajapati, she's just like, okay, hello, what's happened to you? Tell me about it. And you start talking about the Dharma. And she gets really inspired. So she's sort of this person who's able to quite open-minded in a certain kind of way and listen to, in a very painful situation, be open. And she decides to ask for ordination. She starts practicing. And of course it's a bit weird. Now we're so fortunate, we have this model of being able to practice. We don't have to kind of split. We don't have to like give up everything to practice. If you want to live a simple life and go out in the forest, you can do that. But you don't have to. You can kind of have a family and practice, and that's the model in Tree Ratna. We're very kind of that's very important to us, that you can actually, it's the practice that's important, not your situation. But then they have this model of you had to actually, it didn't really work to be in society and practice. It was so much in a woman's position and for the man's position, it was very difficult to practice. So they had the model of leaving. So there was suddenly the Buddha comes back, teaches all these people the Dharma, and all these guys just go off into the forest. And pretty tough for the women left at home, just like, oh great, thanks, to look after the kids, and you've just gone off. And so Ma Pajapati is in this situation where she meets masses and masses of women who are all been left by these guys, monks who've gone off. And, you know, she just, instead of just being like, God, this is, and it is, or it's not an easy situation, she turns it into something positive. She said, well, we can practice as well. Why don't we practice together? And so she starts inspiring all these, this is the 500 masses and masses of women to start practicing. And they're all deeply into their meditation practice, and they practice away, and they actually realise they're quite happy. So they start becoming quite, you know, delighted to be able to practice. And they're like, oh, we want to be ordained as well. So Ma Pajapati goes to the Buddha and says, I want us to be able to be ordained. And he just says, no. Don't know why, but anyway, says no. And she asks him about three times, and that's this classic thing. If you ask three times and the Buddha says no, that's a no. And she asks three times, he says no, that's a no. But then Ananda, who's a very close friend of the Buddha, he starts saying, well, why are you not ordaining these women? What is this about? Is it because they can't gain enlightenment? And the Buddha says, like, no, they can gain enlightenment, absolutely, it's not that. It's just that it's so, I can't see how they're going to live, how are they going to practice, what are the conditions, they're really difficult, you know, they can't just go off in the forest, that's really tough. Nananda says, well, they're really serious, they can gain enlightenment, why can't you ordain them? And the Buddha says, okay. Mm-hmm. So he ordains Maha Pajapati and these women. So she's sort of this one of the first women to be ordained. And so she's sort of come from these, like, conditions where you just think, like, oh, don't try and practice. They're really bad conditions. It's not possible. Just give it up. And she turns all that around and inspires other people, loads of other women, and they all get ordained and start practicing very seriously. And she's one of the one who, you know, she gets this meditation practice after her ordination and gains enlightenment straight away. Yeah. And has a very close relationship with the Buddha. So that's... I think thanks to her, we've got this whole ordination, women being allowed to be ordained. So she's an inspiration. And then we have Terry number two, Dharma dinner. That's quite nice. We've got a Dharma dinner in our order. I quite like that. This is Dharma dinner one. So Dharma Dinner's quite, she has quite a good life. She's she's quite rich. She's got a whole huge, kind of owns loads and loads of land. And, she doesn't. Her husband owns loads and loads and loads of land. And her husband's called Visakha. And they actually really like each other. So it sounds like they have quite a good relationship. And there's this sort of, he comes home and she's cooked dinner. And also, hello, darling. And sit down and eat dinner. And how's your day been? And so you get this sort of, they're having a good time together, but you know, in that, it's oh, it's 2,000 years ago, so she cooks dinner. And then Wanda, he comes home, and he comes in the door, and there's no like, hi, darling, it's just silent. And she's like, oh, it's a bad day at work. And he comes in and sits down, eats dinner, and it's like, no, doesn't say anything, won't look at her. She's like, oh, dear, really bad day at work. And then in the end, she says, look, you know, what is it? What is going on? And then he says, no, I've heard the Buddha speaking today. It was absolutely amazing. It's turned my life around, and I don't want to be married anymore. I'm off. Bye. She's like, and he says, oh, and I don't want to just leave you. And so you can inherit everything. You get everything. You get all the money. You get the whole everything. So it's a bit, you know, maybe not that kind of mature of him. But anyway, I won't comment on what he does. How can you come home and say that? Anyway, but she's like, well, no, actually, I want to practice as well. I don't want to own all these things. I want to practice. I'm going to go and listen to the Buddha too. So off she goes, and they both decided to change their lifestyle and both start practicing. And so off they go and start practicing away. And they have different people teaching them. So after quite a few years, they come back and see how's it going with your practice. And of course, he's given up. He didn't know. He didn't really want to be a monk. It was too demanding. So he's back home, but she's become enlightened. So you get this really interesting position where he says, oh, can you teach me? I haven't quite got it. I can't quite understand this Dharma. Can you help me? I need teaching from you. And she does this amazing kind of teaching about the five skandhas, the nature of self. So this whole idea that we haven't got this self which is fixed and which doesn't change. So she says to him, look at it, you've got your body, but there's no kind of, you can't identify the centre of that, can you? It keeps changing, it's older. You've got your feelings, they come and they go. You've got your perception, how you see things, that comes and goes. You've got all your habits, that comes and go, they come and go. And you've got your consciousness, your way of thinking, your being, that comes and goes. There's nothing there that you can own or have or hold. And you're just over-identify with all those things and cling to them. And that's the problem, that's your problem. So he's like, dong. And then he says, okay, and it's a bit tough, so. But what, well, describe enlightenment then. And she just says, like, well, you know, don't be ridiculous, you have to understand this. You can't kind of just babble about enlightenment. You just need to understand this. Go and ask the Buddha, though, if you want to. See what he thinks. So he goes to the Buddha, and the Buddha says, no, Dhammadina is uttering the words of the Buddha, so that's Buddha Vachana. Exactly, that's exactly how it is. And I would say exactly the same to you. So just listen to her. And then she's renowned as the... she's like one of the most famous... She's a great teacher. She's very, very, very good at explaining the Dharma so that people can understand it. So she becomes this greatly inspiring teacher. So she's this whole Dharma dinner. She's kind of understanding this and able to explain this whole, the quite deep Dharmic concepts on the nature of self. That are tough to understand and tough to hear. She's somehow able to get in there and teach those to people. That's Dhammadina. And the last one I thought I wanted to talk about was Samma, this lady. And she's like, she's not a Buddhist at the beginning of the story. She's just... but what she is she's a very good friend. So she's got this really good friend called Samavati. And they've known each other and been friends for ages. And she really likes Samavati because she's, oh, Samavati is so kind. She's very, very kind. And she's very devoted. Samavati's a Buddhist. So she likes her. So there's this whole, but Samma herself is a bit like, she sees Samavati practicing and she sees that she really likes her, but she's not quite, she doesn't really, isn't convinced about being Buddhist herself. But then, so Samavati, you get a bit of her background. She's lost her parents when they had, there was this huge outbreak of the plague. And her parents die. And then she's brought up by this really lovely family that take care of her. And she's very beautiful. So the leader, the local leader, sees her one day and says, come with me, you have to be my consort. And she doesn't have a lot of choice. You don't have much choice in these days. And she doesn't want to do that. And her family say, you don't have to do that, just refuse. But she just says, well, if I refuse, I'll throw you out of your home and you won't have any possessions, you won't have any food. So she says, okay, you'll have to be a consort to this guy. So she starts living with him, and he's already got quite a few consorts. One day she's also got slaves. So this slave woman to her fills her house with flowers. So she has lots of flowers. On one day she spends all her money, she does get some kind of allowance from this Samavati, she spends all her money on flowers, so the whole house is absolutely full with flowers. And Samavati says, why have you bought so many flowers? And this slave lady says, oh, I've heard the Buddha teaching, and it's really amazing, it was just totally amazing, I'm so grateful, so I bought loads and loads of flowers. And the consorts and Samavati, they're not really allowed out of the palace, so they haven't got much freedom, but this slave lady is allowed to come and go. So she goes to the Buddha, gets teachings from the Buddha, has got an amazing memory, so she listens to it all, remembers it all, goes back and teaches all these ladies who are consorts and who are not allowed out. So they all stop practicing meditation. All except that there's maybe a couple that aren't really interested. They get really jealous of, you know how it can be, the kind of jealousies can arise. So there's this jealousy that arises with another consort who doesn't like the Buddha and is not going to be a Buddhist and hates practicing. And she sort of she has this plan to make Samavati look really bad. And in the end she gets so, this other consort gets so kind of fed up that she locks all these women who are practicing the Dharma into a house and sets fire to it. And they all die. Beware of jealousy, I guess, more of that story. But what happens then is Sama, who's this really, really good friend of Samavati, she's suddenly left in this position of her good friend Samavati is dead. You know, she spent years knowing her and being around her, enjoying her friendship, being inspired by her, and suddenly she's not there anymore. That episode makes her, she then thinks, right, okay, now I'm going to start practicing. There's something, I can't just let life go by anymore. I need to take this seriously. So she goes to goes to the Buddha and becomes ordained. And then she's one of the ones who struggles and struggles and struggles in meditation. So she meditates and meditates and meditates away and hates it every time she sits down. And she hates it and she hates it and she hates it. It's like, God! And it goes on for 25 years. And she's just like, oh, it's really tough, it's really tough. Nothing's happening, nothing's happening. And I must do it because my friend Sam Samavati was so great and the Dharma was so great and she died and I must take care of my life. But nothing's happening, nothing's happening. And then after 25 years, she suddenly gets this sort of, something happens, I don't know what happens, something happens, and she breaks through and becomes enlightened as well. So it's quite, I just really like that. That's three of those 73-62 stories in the Terigata. And although, for me, it's like, although they're these women that have lived thousands of years ago, maybe I'm not in the same situation, they're at bottom, in the same way, it's exactly the same stuff, isn't it? It's kind of letting time go by and not wanting to practice and being inspired and needing to kind of look at ourselves deeply and be prepared to challenge ourselves. And about the Dharma, this is kind of the principles of the Dharma, that there isn't this sort of self in a way that we want to think about it. And that it's not that easy to understand, that we need to really practice. And that we can help each other. And that things like beauty and wealth and stuff like that, they're very nice, but they're not. That's not where it's at. So there's loads of stuff in them that are very, very relevant and help, can help, well, I think they help me practice and keep going.